Hello. And we turn to the conclusion of our chapter out of the sevenfold ignorance towards the sevenfold knowledge. Sri Aurobindo has described the nature of the constitutional ignorance, and he has been in the midst of describing the nature of the psychological ignorance. He's got some of the way through it, tracing how that ignorance ranges from what is beneath our line of awareness in the subconscious, how it speaks to what is behind in the subliminal, what is the nature of the psychology available to us as we grow towards the inmost being, the psychic, and as we grow above to our superconscient source. He continues now with the superconscious. In the superconscious, beyond our present level of awareness, are included the higher planes of mental being as well as the native heights of supramental and pure spiritual being. The first indispensable step in an upward evolution would be to elevate our force of consciousness into those higher parts of mind from which we already receive, but without knowing the source, much of our larger mental movements, those especially that come with a greater power and light, the revelatory, the inspirational, Ila, Saraswati, the intuitive. On these mental heights, in these largenesses, if the consciousness could succeed in reaching them, or maintain and center itself there, something of the direct presence and power of the Spirit, something even, however secondary or indirect, of the supermind, could receive a first expression, could make itself initially manifest, could intervene in the government of our lower being and help to remold it. Essentially, he's suggesting that if we as aspirants would lift our consciousness out of the mind and get even to that bridge of intuition and make that our stable placement, our natural resting place in our consciousness, that would invite into us the supramental and the descent of the supreme spiritual nature. It is possible, without an actual ascent into these at present superconscient mental planes, or without a constant or permanent living in them, by openness to them, by reception of their knowledge and influences, to get rid, to a certain extent, of our constitutional and psychological ignorance. It is possible to be aware of ourselves as spiritual beings and to spiritualize, though imperfectly, our normal human life and consciousness. There could be a conscious communication and guidance from this greater, more luminous mentality, and a reception of its enlightening and transforming forces. That is within the reach of the highly developed or the spiritually awakened human being. But it would not be more than a preliminary stage. To reach an integral self-knowledge, an entire consciousness and power of being, there is necessary an ascent beyond the plane of our normal mind. Such an ascent is at present possible and an absorbed superconscience. But that could lead only to an entry into the higher levels in a state of immobile or ecstatic trance. If the control of that highest spiritual being is to be brought into our waking life, there must be a conscious heightening and widening into immense ranges of new being, new consciousness, new potentialities of action, a taking up, as integral as possible, of our present being, consciousness, activities, and a transmutation of them into divine values, which would affect a transfiguration of our human existence. 4. Wherever a radical transition has to be made, there is always this triple movement, ascent, widening of field and base, integration in nature's method of self-transcendence. So this continues, this mode of evolving and bridging and integrating one grade after another of emerging powers of being will not be discontinued as we rise into the supramental. It is a feature of the cosmic evolution, not to be dispensed with. Any such evolutionary change must necessarily be associated with a rejection of our present narrowing temporal ignorance. So, you mentioned the constitutional pages ago. We just finished talking about the psychological. Now we come to the temporal ignorance. For not only do we now live from moment to moment of time, but our whole view is limited to our life in the present body between a single birth and death. As our regard does not go farther back in the past, so it does not extend farther out into the future. Thus, we are limited by our physical memory and awareness of the present life in a transient corporeal formation. But this limitation of our temporal consciousness is intimately dependent upon the preoccupation of our mentality with the material plane and life in which it is at present acting. The limitation is not a law of the spirit, but a temporary provision for an intended first working of our manifested nature. If the preoccupation is relaxed or put aside, an extension of the mind affected, an opening into the subliminal and superconscient, into the inner and higher being created, it is possible to realize our persistent existence in time as well as our eternal existence beyond it. So, if we can grow a little beyond and above the ordinary human level, we can find what is eternal above and what is immortal within the play of time, both joined in one mighty realization. He continues, this is essential if we are to get our self-knowledge into the right focus. For at present, our whole consciousness and action are vitiated, spoiled, rendered faulty, by an error of spiritual perspective which prevents us from seeing in right proportion and relation the nature, purpose, and conditions of our being. A belief in immortality is made so vital a point in most religions because it is a self-evident necessity if we are to rise above the identity with the body and its preoccupation with the material level. If we're limited to the material of the vehicle we know, and we have it merely from birth to death, then how is it that we're to improve and evolve from level to level of consciousness? So belief is articulated in religion, but Sri Aurobindo finds it insufficient. But a belief is not sufficient to alter radically this mistake of perspective. The true self-knowledge of our being in time can come to us only when we live in the consciousness of our immortality. We have to awake to a concrete sense of our perpetual being in time and of our timeless existence. He is not using the terminology with which we associate this so much. That being who is perpetually in time stems from our psychic essence, grows into an entity, then into a conscious psychic being. It is what we speak about in common parlance as the soul, and of our timeless existence, that vast spiritual reality which always we are, the Atman universal, the Jivatman as the individual, part of that universal, which radiates through this psychic being its own truth into the process of time. He continues, for immortality in its fundamental sense does not mean merely some kind of personal survival of the bodily death. We are immortal by the eternity of our self-existence without beginning or end, beyond the whole succession of physical births and deaths through which we pass, beyond the alternations of our existence in this and other worlds. The spirit's timeless existence is the true immortality. There is, no doubt, a secondary meaning of the word which has its truth, for corollary to this true immortality, there exists a perpetual continuity of our temporal existence and experience from life to life, from world to world, after the dissolution of the physical body. But this is a natural consequence of our timelessness, which expresses itself here as a perpetuity in eternal time. So always, really, we are that Atman, that self of Brahman. That is the timeless, the true immortality. What extends here, playing in time, articulated in our individual souls, is that psychic expression of that timeless being above. The realization of timeless immortality comes by the knowledge of self in the non-birth and non-becoming, and of the changeless spirit within us. The realization of time immortality comes by the knowledge of self in the birth and becoming, and is translated into a sense of the persistent identity of the soul through all changes of mind and life and body. This, too, is not a mere survival. It is timelessness translated into the time manifestation. He is touched upon again by bringing in non-birth and non-becoming. The Isha Upanishad, verse 12, which speaks directly to that. And the thrust of this whole passage would make us remember the 17th verse of the Isha Upanishad, which he rendered like this: the breath of things, vayu, is an immortal life, but of this body, ashes are the end. Om, O will, Agni, remember that which was done, remember. In other words, the consciousness must reach this continuity until all the lives, like pearls, are threaded on this string that yokes them all, that unites them all. All lives, the expression of this single being. So, timeless immortality and time immortality. By the first realization, we become free from obscuring subjection to the chain of birth and death, that supreme object of so many Indian disciplines. By the second realization, added to the first, we are able to possess freely, with right knowledge, without ignorance, without bondage by the chain of our actions, the experiences of the Spirit in its successions of time eternity. So note that he suggests here that the grand liberation into the Spirit above, the Atman Brahman, is step first. Step second is coming back into the psychic and possessing that, so that one can then freely experience without being chained to the karmic reactions of nature, possess the universe for the divine. So this is interesting, because in developing his yogic scheme, he and Mother suggested that people move first to the psychic realization and then to the spiritual. And here, the reverse is suggested. And of course, there were great beings who went through that avenue, notably Kapali Shastriya, the great South Indian savant, member of the Sri Aurobindo Ashram. But in either realization, truly envisaged as side and other side of one truth, to exist consciously in eternity and not in the bondage of the hour and the succession of the moments is the substance of the change. So to exist is a first condition of the divine consciousness and the divine life. This is the answer to the temporal ignorance, to live in this kind of immortality, to possess both brands. To possess and govern from that inner eternity of being, the course and process of the becoming is the second, the dynamic condition, with as its practical outcome a spiritual self-possession and self-mastery. These changes are possible only by a withdrawal from our absorbing material preoccupation. That does not necessitate a rejection or neglect of the life in the body, and a constant living on the inner and higher planes of the mind and the spirit. To live inside, to have this spiritual and psychic existence available to us, without having contempt for the frame, without abandoning or rejecting or some way annulling the materiality of our life. For the heightening of our consciousness, he writes, into its spiritual principle is effectuated by an ascent and a stepping back inward. Both these movements are essential. Out of our transient life, from moment to moment, into the eternal life of our immortal consciousness. But with it, there comes also a widening of our range of consciousness and field of action in time, and a taking up and a higher use of our mental, our vital, our corporeal existence. So he's mentioned this in several places in the Life Divine. This inner movement towards the soul, this movement upwards, rising, transcending into the regions of the superconscient, where we gain access to our true being, our true consciousness, the true delight, through the gates of the supramental. And then a broadening to embrace the universe. There arises a knowledge of our being no longer as a consciousness dependent on the body, but as an eternal spirit which uses all the worlds and all lives for various self-experience. We see it to be a spiritual entity possessed of a continuous soul life, perpetually developing its activities through successive physical existences, a being determining its own becoming. In that knowledge, not ideative, but felt in our very substance, it becomes possible to live not as slaves of a blind karmic impulsion, but as masters, subject only to the divine within us, of our being and nature. So in other passages, of course, he would say this is the union of this psychic being that is developing within us all as the true source of our individuality, fused ultimately with what he calls the central being, the Jivatman. So now he's finished speaking about the temporal ignorance. At the same time, we get rid of the egoistic ignorance. So this release that he's described, this raising of our consciousness above, which erases, raising of the consciousness above and the going inwards of our consciousness to the soul, both of those erase the psychological ignorance and as well the temporal ignorance and now this egoistic ignorance. At the same time, we get rid of the egoistic ignorance. For so long as we are at any point bound by that, the divine life must either be unattainable or imperfect in its self-expression. For the ego is a falsification of our true individuality by a limiting self-identification of it with this life, this mind, this body. It is a separation from other souls, which shuts us up in our own individual experience and prevents us from living as the universal individual. It is a separation from God, our highest self, who is the one self in all existences and the divine inhabitant within us. So when we live described as so small a being, we're divided from our own core truth, we're divided from other souls, we're divided from the divine itself, we're divided from the universe around. As our consciousness changes into the height and depth and wideness of the spirit, the ego can no longer survive there. It is too small and feeble to subsist in that vastness and dissolves into it. For it exists by its limits and perishes by the loss of its limits. The being breaks out of its imprisonment in a separated individuality, becomes universal, assumes a cosmic consciousness in which it identifies itself with the self and spirit, the life, the mind, the body of all beings, or it breaks out upward into a supreme pinnacle and infinity and eternity of self-existence, independent of its cosmic or its individual existence. The ego collapses, losing its wall of separation into the cosmic immensity. Or it falls into nothingness, unable to breathe in the heights of the spiritual ether. If something of its movements remains by habit of nature, yet these also fall away and are replaced by a new impersonal, personal seeing, feeling, action. This disappearance of the ego does not bring with it the destruction of our true individuality, our spiritual existence, for that was always universal and one with the transcendence. But there is a transformation which replaces the separative ego by the Purusha, a conscious face and figure of the universal being, and a self and power of the transcendent divine in cosmic nature. This last section could be autobiographical. It describes the actual change of consciousness and the consequences that it had within and around Sri Aurobindo as he became the radiant center of the spiritual community. In the same movement, by the very awakening into the spirit, there is a dissolution of the cosmic ignorance. For we have the knowledge of ourselves as our timeless, immutable, self-possessing, as our timeless, immutable self, possessing itself in cosmos and beyond cosmos. This knowledge becomes the basis of the divine play in time, reconciles the one and the many, the eternal unity and the eternal multiplicity, reunites the soul with God and discovers the divine in the universe. So as that mastering realization you described got rid of the psychological and the egoistic ignorance, it too dissolves the cosmic ignorance. It is by this realization that we can approach the absolute as the source of all circumstances and relations, possess the world in ourselves in an utmost wideness and in a conscient dependence on its source, and by so taking it up, raise it and realize through it the absolute values that converge into the absolute. If our self-knowledge is thus made complete in all its essentials, our practical ignorance, which in its extreme figures itself as wrongdoing, suffering, falsehood, error, and is the cause of all life's confusions and discords, will yield its place to the right will of self-knowledge, and its false or imperfect values recede before the divine values of the true consciousness, force, and ananda. So, the practical, the cosmic, the egoistic, the temporal, the psychological, and of course the constitutional, released into greater figures of knowledge. For right consciousness, right action, and right being, not in the imperfect sense of our petty moralities, but in the large and luminous movement of a divine living, the conditions are union with God, unity with all beings, a life governed and formed from within outwards, in which the source of all thought, will, and action shall be the Spirit working through the truth and the divine law, which are not built and constructed by the mind of ignorance, but are self-existent and spontaneous in their self-fulfillment. Not so much a law as the truth acting in its own consciousness and in a free, luminous, plastic, automatic process of its knowledge. This would seem to be the method and the result of the conscious spiritual evolution, a transformation of the life of the ignorance into the divine life of the truth-conscious spirit, a change from the mental into a spiritual and supramental way of being, a self-expansion out of the sevenfold ignorance into the sevenfold knowledge. This transformation would be the natural completion of the upward process of nature as it heightens the forces of consciousness from principle to higher principle, until the highest, the spiritual principle, becomes expressed and dominant in her, takes up cosmic and individual existence on the lower planes into its truth, and transforms all into a conscious manifestation of the Spirit. The true individual, the spiritual being, emerges, individual yet universal yet self-transcendent. Life no longer appears as a formation of things and an action of being created by the separative ignorance. The final justification of Satchit Ananda accepting the terms of division and darkness to work itself back towards unity and aggregation of spirit. So, the sevenfold ignorance, constitutional, psychological, temporal, egoistic, cosmic, practical. That's six. The chapter is about the sevenfold. So what is the seventh? If we look back to reality and the integral knowledge earlier, you'll find that it is the ignorance of the absolute. The original ignorance is ignorance of the absolute. And here he rather hints at it in this penultimate paragraph. He says again, it is by this realization that we can approach the absolute as the source of all circumstances and relations, possess the world and ourselves in an utmost wideness and in a conscient dependence on its source. And by so taking it up, raise it and realize through it the absolute values that converge into the absolute. So there we are, all the seven. Next week, we take up chapter 20, The Philosophy of Rebirth. But tonight we close with Savitri, taking a section that I've read before, I think in December of 2015. This is from Canto 2, The Adoration of the Divine Mother. This is, of course, in Book 3, The Book of the Divine Mother. A stillness absolute, incommunicable, meets the sheer self-discovery of the soul. A wall of stillness shuts it from the world. A gulf of stillness swallows up the sense and makes unreal all that mind has known, all that the laboring senses still would weave, prolonging an imaged unreality. Self's vast spiritual silence occupies space. Only the inconceivable is left, only the nameless without space and time. Abolished is the burdening need of life. Thought falls from us, we cease from joy and grief. The ego is dead, we are freed from being and care. We have done with birth and death and work and fate. O soul, it is too early to rejoice. Thou hast reached the boundless silence of the self. Thou hast leaped into a glad divine abyss. But where hast thou thrown self's mission and self's power? On what dead bank on the eternal's road? One was within thee who was self and world. What hast thou done for his purpose and the stars? Escape brings not the victory and the crown. Something thou cam'st to do from the unknown. But nothing is finished, and the world goes on, because only half God's cosmic work is done. Only the everlasting know has neared and stared into thy eyes and killed thy heart. But where is the lover's everlasting yes? And immortality in the secret heart, the voice that chants to the creator fire, the symboled om, the great assenting word, the bridge between the rapture and the calm, the passion and the beauty of the bride, the chamber where the glorious enemies kiss, the smile that saves, the golden peak of things. This too is truth at the mystic fount of life. A black veil has been lifted. We have seen the mighty shadow of the omniscient Lord. But who has lifted up the veil of light, and who has seen the body of the King? The mystery of God's birth and acts remains, leaving unbroken the last chapter's seal, unsolved the riddle of the unfinished play. The cosmic player laughs within his mask, and still the last inviolate secret hides behind the human glory of a form, behind the gold eidolon of a name. A large white line has figured as a goal, but far beyond the ineffable sun-track's blaze. What seemed the source and end was a wide gate, a last bare step into eternity. An eye has opened upon timelessness. Infinity takes back the forms it gave, and through God's darkness or his naked light, his million rays return into the sun. There is a zero sign of the supreme. Nature left nude and still uncovers God. But in her grandiose nothingness, all is there. When her strong garbs are torn away from us, the soul's ignorance is slain, but not the soul. The zero covers an immortal face. A high and blank negation is not all. A huge extinction is not God's last word, life's ultimate sense, the close of being's course, the meaning of this great mysterious world. In absolute silence sleeps an absolute power. Awaking, it can wake the trance-bound soul, and in the ray reveal the parent sun. It can make the world a vessel of spirit's force. It can fashion in the clay God's perfect shape. To free the self is but one radiant pace. Here to fulfill himself was God's desire. So, we'll meet again next Sunday on the 9th of July here in Pensacola. On the 9th of July in Pondicherry in 1983, we were blessed to receive the relics of Sri Aurobindo. Perhaps we'll share a moment about that when we gather next Sunday. Much love to you all. All the best. Namaste. Jai Ma.